Just like to start by giving a little preview, overview of the parasha, just at least we know, you know, what we're covering in the parasha. The parasha begins with the patira of Sarah Imenu. She passes away. Following that, Avram negotiates a burial spot. He goes to the Bnei Chet and begins negotiations to find a special place, because he knew of the great significance of this Maras HaMachpelah. He then decides it's time for Yitzhak to get married. He realizes that, look, Yitzhak really got slaughtered on the sacrifice, and where would his descendants come from? So he, you know, made it a big responsibility to ensure that Yitzhak gets married. He sends out Eliezer, and Eliezer, the first time he's doing a job of this nature, he decides to design some kind of litmus test in order to know for sure that this is going to be the wife for Yitzhak. Then he meets Rivka. He then follows by meeting the in-laws, and finally, just before the end, we have one of the most romantic statements in the history of Sefer Bereishis, which is when Rivka comes on the camel and she sees Yitzhak coming out to daven. She sees the guy and she just falls off the camel. Exactly what it says as Poshut Pshat in the pasuk. And then towards the end of the parasha, Avram remarries Keturah, who was actually Hagar, his ex-wife. And then it tells us of the descendants of Yishmael. Now, Viyu Chayei Sarah, and the life of Sarah was. Baruch HaMakadosh Kadosh comments that the word Viyu, and it was, tells us it happened as a sudden death. It wasn't planned, something caused it. Viyu, as opposed to usually you find Vayechi, you know, and they lived so and so, but this was Viyu. And we know that the cause of her death was a shock, the news of the Akedah. But what exactly was that shock? So different opinions, but I read in the Ma'amla his most beautiful opinion, which I'd like to share. He writes over there that the Satan came in disguise and told Sarah that her son was being taken to be offered up by her husband. And to the great Tzadikus, she also had nevuah to some degree, and she kind of was able to deal with that in her own way. The Satan went away, redisguised himself, the same guy, and came back and said, you know that guy who just came and told you your son's being taken up and being killed, sort of thing? He was lying. Sarah heard the news. She was so happy that he's still alive that she died of that shock. Now, what difference does it make, you know, how she died, what caused the shock? But there's an idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world in a system called Midah Keneged Midah. Measure for measure, the punishment must fit the crime. And especially when it comes to the tzaddikim, they are judged to a hairbreadth. So what did Sarah do that caused her to deserve to die? So we know that the Mefarshim bring down that something to do along the lines of, you know, Hashem Kadosh Baruch Hu told her that she's going to have a child, and she laughed. But what happened after that? We look in the pasuk, and Hashem says, why did you laugh? And she said, never. She denied it. Sarah said something, she laughed, and then she denied it. How was she taken away? The Satan came to her and said, your son's been killed. And then he comes and denies it. Her neshama left her. The same way. We know the famous Gemara Bracha says that when a person goes through Yisurim in life, Yifashvesh b'masav, the Gemara Bracha and Dav Hei. When a person goes through hardships, trials and tribulations in their life, you've got to examine your ways. So Hashem runs the world in the system. Sometimes the person suddenly finds he's lost his job, you know, the rumors have been said and they're not even true, and he lost his job. So it could be that perhaps this guy wants to speak talking about the people. Another guy could have, you know, business thriving and suddenly sales are down. Maybe, you know, he's been not so kind to poor people, to widows, whatever it be. Each one knows their own question, and now and again we should try, without getting too crazy about it, but to analyse, look through our lives and see where we're going wrong and why things are happening, and maybe something small within ourselves which we could correct and enhance, and it will take that problem away. V'yu chayei Sarah, mea shana ve'esim shana ve'sheva shanim. Rashi deals with why it's split up into three. But the Zohar HaKadosh asked an important grammatical problem, question on this pasuk, which I'm sure being Rav Litzky Talmidim, we should have all picked up. We have what's called Lashon Rabim and Lashon Yachid. Rabim is plural, and Yachid is singular. When it comes to big numbers, 100, 200, 500, that would be rabim, that would be shanim. Whereas it comes to a single unit digit, like 1 to 9, that's a lashon yachid, it should be shana. When we look in the pasuk, we see the exact opposite extreme. It says, mea shana, esrim shana, and sheva shanim. Why is it written in that way? That's a question that's an unbelievable question. We always read it, we never really notice it. So he explains like this. A person who makes himself big in this world is going to be small in the next world. A person who makes himself small in this world will be big in the next world. That's why the number 7, which is a small number, that becomes shanim. Many times, you know, people always like to have the limelight. They want the plaque on the wall. They want all the big jobs, the announcer, the head madrich. But sometimes the people behind the scenes, people who have to change the toilet paper, people have to schlep, people who no one really sees what they're doing, they're really the greatest ones. Because why are you doing? Sarah Imenu, why was she so great? The angels came to visit. Where's Sarah? She's in the tent. Low profile. She was responsible, a wife's responsible for her husband's greatness. Where was she? She was in the tent. She was hiding away. She's behind it in every single way, but we don't see much of her in the public eye because that was her middah. She was sneered, she was a modest person. Low-key. That's the greatness. Now, I love gematria, so I couldn't help but by putting it in here, but there's a great gematria.
Sorry, I still don't understand what you mean. The plural is 127 years, so you're saying that this, the when it's 7, when it's small...
It should say, really grammatically, the pasuk should say, Mea Shanim,
yeah.
Esrim Shanim, and Sheva Shana. But it says the opposite. It says Mea Shana, Esrim Shana, and Sheva Shanim.
I just don't understand what you said then. So,
the one who makes himself small in this world will be big in the next world. Because the small number 7 is a small number, and that's connected to the word Shanim. Her small years, there were big years over there, talking about after she died. Whereas the people who make themselves big in this world, big ages, big years, big personalities, they're small in the next world. V'yihiyu chayesara, v'yihiyu's gematria 37. What's 37 got to do with Sarah's life? So we know that Sarah Imenu was 90 years old when she got married, and 127 when she died. She was 90 when she had, sorry, she was 90 years old when she had her child, when she bore Yitzhak. And out of the 127 years that she lived, 37 years were spent with her son Yitzhak. That was the best years of her life. She had a good life. But those were the best years of Sarah's life. The Yihiyu, and it was Chaye Sarah, her life was her child, Yitzhak, the nachas she got from Yitzhak. Now keep that on hold for a second. I'm going to forward you to the last sedra in Parsha, in Sefer Bereishis, Vayechi. It says, Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu lived 147 years. Nothing to do with that he was an amazing snooker player. But Vayechi is gematria 34. What's 34 got to do with Yaakov's life? Yosef was 17 years old when he was sold by his brothers. And when they came down in the famine, Yaakov and his sons, he was 130 years old, and he reunited with Yosef at 130, and lived another 17 years with Yosef, his pride and joy son. 17 years before, 17 years after, 34. Same parallel idea. Vayuchai Sarah, 37, Yitzchak, within Sarah's life. Vayechi, 34, the years with Yosef, pride and joy, those are the best. Yaakov, we know, had a very, very hard life. I'm not going to go into that, maybe in another time. But the best of his life was the time of 34. You don't find this in the Quran, you don't find it in the New Testament, but for argument's sake, we just call it some kind of coincidence. So it carries on, and the passage says, Vayavai Avram Lispoid Lesara Vilispoisa. Avram Avinu now came to eulogize Sarah. In those days, it was actually customary for the children should also eulogize. The sons would come and they would speak to the mother. Yet there's no mention of Yitzhak. Suddenly off the scene. Why was Yitzhak not there? Why was Yitzhak not there being mechabed his mother, honoring his mother with words? It's actually not brought down in this parsha. I couldn't find why I saw it once before, but it's actually brought somewhere in Devarim and it's mentioned over there and it's connected to here. As a person gets older, his tithes are diminished. The older person gets, his physical desires, they all go down. Yeah? A guy who's, in our 20s, so we travel, to Yerushalayim to have a beautiful steak, well done, like half a kilo steak on the grill. Whereas an old man, his highlight of food is, you know, maybe like Weetabix with a bit of saccharin, you know? That's what him, you know, he's got no time, he doesn't really care about food. Yeah? Women, right? A young guy, a 70-year-old man, you know, just about to walk to the bedroom, you know? He's weak, let's see, he's the only, his tiber, every tiber an old person has is basically going downhill. There's only one tiber, the side point, which increases with age, and that's covered. People get older sometimes and they demand more covered. Like it's old age home sometimes, you see them screaming, oh, so basically, every Bubi and Zaidi, all our grandparents, great grandparents, they're all Sadiqas, Sadiqin, right? Who knows a grandmother who's not a nice lady? Come, kindle her, have your sweet, have your chocolate. What did I ever do wrong? Yisa comes along and makes the following understanding. I was born to my mother at the age of 90 years old, when she was an elderly lady. I know how great she is, but what can I say that's going to justify how great she was? Whatever I say, my baby's also a good lady. My baby's also good. Well, how is he going to make it justified to say how great his mother is? So the way he mechabered her is by not speaking at all. He said, my father used to pick up mummy from Gan. She's a little girl. Avon knew Sarah when she was a little girl. He's known her whole life, over 100 years. It's fitting for my father to give the hesped. Because what he knows, he can speak really truly. But whatever I say, how great she was, no one's going to really take it to heart in such a way, because she's just an old lady and I've only known her in her old age.
Were you going to bring this?
I have to look it up. I have to give you a source. I looked for it, but I couldn't find it. It was actually brought in a different part of somewhere else. And then we come to the famous selling of the Maharat HaMachpelah. First of all, how did Avinu know of the Maharat HaMachpelah? This was a very special place. So there's a commentary called Oznaim LaTorah, and he said, you know, in last week's Parsha, when it says that Ela Bakar Rats Avram, Avram was visited by Malachim. He wanted to be mechabed them, the mitzvah hakas of Orchim. He went and shechted, says, three cows. From each word it learns Rach V'Tov, three different cows. Wanted to give them all the choicest part of the tongue. But on his journey, it's Ve'ela Bakar Rats Avram. And Avram ran. He took Yishmael. He wanted to teach him Shechita, mechanic his child along the way. And it says that this animal, the cow he was chasing, ran away. And through it running away, he ended up arriving at the Maharat HaMachpelah. But as Naim Latorah says, you know, if you take the word Ve'ela Bakar Rats Avraham and you rearrange the letters Bakar, you get Kever. Ve'ela Kever Rats Avraham. And Avraham ran, he was shown this Kever. He was told, you're going to have a child. And what's the Kever? The Kever is basically continuation. You're going to be buried here, you and your wife and family, and your son's going to bury you here, and that's your progeny for the future. That's how he, one idea how he came across this place. Others say that, you know, something passed by, you know, Adam and Chava were sitting on the couch, whatever that means, and different ideas. But he knew that this place had very special significance. So he comes along, he says, who do I speak to, who I negotiate with? The Bnecha are there, and suddenly appears to the scene the Ephron. Mr. Ephron comes along and starts his negotiations with Avram. Just take it, we're doing it from us, you're a prince. In our midst, you're a great guy, just take it, you know, start schmoozing, and Avram says, no, I'll pay you, and finally, you know, he just adds in there, Svadi style, you know, what's 400 between me and you? And Avram got the hint, and he weighed him out 400 of the top value coins, centurion, legal tender throughout the world, and he pays him top dollar for this coin. So Rashi brings down on the spot, if you look when it says, V'yishko le'Ephron, he weighed up to Ephron, Ephron's name is missing a vav. Missing a vav, the vav, all the time Ephron spell, ayin pei, resh, vav, nun, and suddenly he's lost the vav from his name. So I heard from Rabbi Taz, if you count the gematria of the word Ephron without the vav, it's 400. What's 400 got to Ephron? Ephron was an absolute nobody. He was nobody. All he was 400. What was that 400? The 400 Adam Avinu gave him. That's who he was. He was nothing. He came along like some kind of big shot. Really, he was a nobody. So why did he lose a vav? Vav is always the connection between the high world and the low world. Ephron sold himself cheap for the physical world. Once he wants after money, after physicality, he disconnected himself. He then lost the vav which connected him. Many times today, people get so caught up with money, so caught up with the physicality of this world. You know, when it comes to buying a car, every possible extra orders. When it comes to going on holiday, you know, the top hotel. When it comes to doing mitzvahs, you know, buying a lulav and esrog, you know, what's the cheapest one? You know, and the mezuzahs, you know, what's the, I'm happy with the 18 quid. You know, getting cheaper. You know, people always try to skimp. But that really is the MS. Those are the small amounts of monies, and that's the everlasting what's going to take you. That's going to connect your vav from this world to the next world. Then comes to the more the next chapter, Perek Kav Dalet. Says over here, the Avraham Zaken Baba Yamim Vashem Berach Avraham Bakol. Avraham now is an old man. He came with his days, and Hashem blessed Avraham with everything. What does it mean he came with his days? You know, went shopping to Oxford Street, comes back full of two big bags of days. He came with his days. Very unusual expression. The people who lived their lives, and they lived their life every year, basically, you know, another party, another birthday, perhaps another car, another wife, another cigar, another bar. Yeah, look back on their life, they've not achieved anything. The years have gone by, what have you lived? They just lived. Go through the circle of life. Wake up in the morning, go to work, come back, have dinner, go out, have fun, come back, go to sleep. Go to the same rigmarole. And just as they get a bit older, they just do it a bit more slower, and they have more time sleeping and less time eating and what have you. People go and live through life and they have nothing to show for their lives. It just goes in thin air. Some people, on the other hand, they live their life and they look back at their life and say, you know, last year, you know, I did a bit of good. I was able to help people. I, you know, raised money for charity. I learned Torah. I did things with my life. Avraham Avinu was not just a person who could look back on his years, not just look back at his months. He could look back at his days. Every single day of his life, unbelievable, the guy's over 150 now. He looked back at each day of his life and said what he did. He could account for every day. Never was a day wasted. Never. Avraham Zaken, Baba Yom, he came with his days. Yeah, it doesn't say with his shanim, with his years. Came with his days. And I once said from Rabbi Hillel, he said, you know the difference between doing a physical pleasure and a spiritual pleasure? Right now, you eat a beautiful meal. And you enjoy it. You've enjoyed it right now. Tomorrow, you could still, you know, feel a bit good about the meal. But 5 years from now, that meal's gone. Gone, dead and buried. You're never going to talk about that meal that you once had in Yeshiva, you know, that was a really lovely lunch you had. The person does a chesed. Everyone in this room right now could think back last year, 2 years ago, whenever it was, you helped an old lady across the street. You helped a guy who was down, you gave him 100 quid, 50 quid, whatever it may be. You did a chesed. You can still tap into and smile on your face and relive that experience. Why? Because davar ruchnius. A davar ruchnius is everlasting. It will never ever go. It's an infinite pleasure which you can always tap into. Something physical is gone with the wind. You live it there for the moment, you get your high, and you come down, you can be even more low than the high that you reach. Even worse before you had that pleasure. And there's a really, really touching story that I once heard from Zelig Pliskin. He says there was once a girl called Rachela, and she suffered from leukemia, lo aleinu. She's at 23 years old, and they made a shidduch for her with another guy who also had the same illness. After about a year and a half of the marriage, her husband, you know, passed away, became ill and he passed away. And it was hard, you know, she'd been a widow, young girl, she had a husband, and now, you know, it seemed a very, very sad situation. And she was a bit, you know, dealing with her situation of life. And her friends came to her with no sympathy. They said, Rachela, you know, you caused this to yourself. You knew very well the guy was ill. Why did you put yourself in such a matzav? Why did you put yourself in such a situation? You brought it upon yourself. And the response was unbelievable. She said, if I had the opportunity to do this again, I would. And they're all stunned, they're astounded. They couldn't believe what she just said. And then she went to explain. She said, because neither of us knew when the time would come for the other to leave this world, therefore every second we lived together as husband and wife, we lived to the maximum potential. We never argued what flavour, you know, we should have the chicken. We never argued what channel the TV should be on. Every moment they spent together, they utilised its maximum potential. It doesn't always mean a person who lives 100 years has a better quality of life than someone who lives to 35 years. It's what has a person done, what have they achieved, and how fulfilled are they with their life. Powerful story, you know, in the presence of time, good to just think of that story again and see how one can appreciate the moments in life that we had. The saying that we say that time is the most valuable commodity in this world. Whatever gold, whatever silver, whatever oranges, whatever there is in this world, time. Time is potential. The mitzvah goes, mitzvah is a potential. Do one mitzvah, you have a potential to do another mitzvah, another moment in time. Now comes the famous story with Eliezer and Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu calls upon Eliezer. He says, "My good friend, time to find a wife for my dear son Yitzchak. Place your hand, sin mayadcha tachas yerechi, place your hand by my thigh." We know that it's really the bris milah. We'll speak about in a moment, but there's a side gematria about the term. Na yadcha is the same gematria as milah. Although the pasuk doesn't say the bris milah, it just says, you know, by your side, but there's a remez over there that it meant the milah. So I have a question first of all. Up until now, Eliezer has been the loyal servant of Abraham. He's entrusted him with everything. Eliezer is running the whole Avram.com empire. Avraham Avinu was a multi billionaire. He had to put things into perspective. He made Bill Gates look like a welfare case. Right? The guy was loaded, right? Richest man on the planet. Comes along and he's trusted Eliezer implicitly all his life with everything that he had. And now suddenly he woke up in the morning, perhaps he had a bad dream, and he says, "You know, Eliezer, I don't trust you anymore. You know, I don't trust you. You know, you've never given me reason to doubt you, but I just don't trust you." That doesn't seem right. Suddenly, you know, come along and now take an oath. Now come and take an oath. And why do I go on the bris? So I saw Kliyaka yesterday. Something so special. Why is it that we couldn't marry into Canaan? Why didn't want to marry into Canaan? Because Canaan was cursed. Why was Canaan cursed? You remember back in the Parashas Noach, when they came out, Noach got drunk, and his son Ham, he had relations with his father. And from there it says, "Cursed be Canaan." I don't know, he says, how can it be that I am blessed through my bris, the brachas come from my bris, how could we connect with someone who's cursed through the exact same part? It doesn't tally up. Therefore we cannot marry into them. It doesn't mix. We're blessed through there, and they're cursed through there, and they can never meet. Noah, when Noah came out of the right. the ark, he had three sons, and he got drunk. And there's something to say that he had his one of his sons saw him undressed, and whereas two of them, shame, they covered him with the talis, so the others either castrated him because they were afraid more children will be born and their whole estate will be divided by more than three. But other opinions say that, you know, he had a relation, but either they tampered in that area. It says that cursed be Canaan. From then on, they couldn't curse Ham, because Ham was already blessed through the bracha of Noah. Once Hashem has put his blessing on somebody, you can't undo that blessing. You can't override the power blessing bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore I had to miss the next generation, and therefore Hashem said, "Cursed be Canaan." Therefore, because they were a cursed nation in some degree, and we were a blessed nation, they were cursed through their bris, and we were blessed through our bris. Therefore, Kliyakar says that it wasn't shy that it should ever come together. We could marry into that area. Now, so why is it that Abraham was so insistent on him, you know, not trusting Eliezer, coming along and insisting that he swear? So my Rav in London, Rav Aaron Basus, said the following beautiful idea. He said, when it came to Gashmias, Avraham Avinu didn't mind taking risks. Didn't mind taking risks, 100 million more, 100 million less. He didn't mind. Came to Davar Ruchnias, no chances. No, I don't care who you are. I don't care how great, what a good track record you got, Eliezer. This is the future of Klal Yisrael, this is my son. You swear to me, I'm not taking one risk. Zero, zero, zero. Every precaution possible, because that is what is important to him. And that's weird to sometimes look into our lives and try and, you know, sometimes when it comes to our physical things, again, we just mentioned it before, but to focus on the emphasis of the spiritual things in the same way that we treat our physical things. You know, a person's personal belongings, his Gemara, his religious objects, his Lulav and Esrog. You know, once there was a story, there was a yeshiva over here in Eretz Israel, I think it was Ponovich, and they had only one place left, and two brochim came to apply, and they both sat with the Rosh Hashiva. One was a really Gaon in Talmud. One was, you know, also above average. So that everyone was sure that the boy who was the Gaon was going to go and get the place in the yeshiva. But the Rosh Yeshiva decided the other boy. So when they left, they were all shocked. Rav, you know, we had an opportunity, what a big cover for us to have this Gaon, you know, really smart, intellectual, Gemara, Talmudic scholar in our yeshiva. He said, look, it was just after Sukkot that they came to join this man, and he looked out the window and he saw that the Tzach leaves had been placed on the floor. And the boy who had more knowledgeable, you know, and knew more learning, he walked over the leaves. But the other guy walked around it. So a person doesn't got value for Kedusha, doesn't value a mitzvah, just walks past and treads on it. It's not the sort of character we're looking to build a yeshiva with. He can know as much as he wants. Person can know immense amount of Torah, can know Torah about pair back to front. But if you don't internalize it, it doesn't change you who you are, it doesn't improve your midas, then it's all being in vain. There's no Torah without Derech Eretz. It's all great to do one or not the other, but they have to link together.
What yeshiva was that?
Sorry? I think upon Richard Rob. It's quite a famous story. As I just mentioned, another vort that came to mind in Parsha Ki Tetzei, there's a mitzvah. It says, "Lo yilech bekisecha even ve'even gedola katana." You should not have in your possession two unequal stones. And it says over there, because this is an abomination, eyes of Kodesh Baruch Hu, and if you do it, l'man yarichu niyamecha, anyone who has who has equal weights. So what was the mitzvah of honest weight? In those days, they never had electronic scales like we do today. What happened? You'd go into the market, you want to buy some tomatoes, they had one of these scales, and they had weights. So you want 5 kilo of tomato, they put the 5 kilo scale on top of one side, then they measure up the tomatoes, and once it balances, they work out that's 5 kilos, and you pay for 5 kilos. It seems, on one hand, the reward is so great, l'man yarichu niyamecha, and yet if you don't do it, k'tovat Hashem. So I thought to say, maybe it could be that this mitzvah, who really knows? Who's going to know the value of the weight? Only Kodesh Baruch Hu. Therefore, if you have this honest weight, you're basically saying, I don't believe in God. If you do, you say, I do believe in God. But it's down to the past of mind, the client is never ever going to know the truth. Only you in your heart will know. Therefore, Hashem, I'm trusting you. From one extreme to the other. But there's another vault, another idea, which is brought down, a beautiful, beautiful idea. Lo yihye b'kischa even v'even gedolo katana. One of the Hasidic rabbis, he says, don't have in your stones, in your possession, two unequal stones. What are these two stones referring to? The Ten Commandments, the two stones. We know the first commandment, the first five, is called Mitzvah ben Adam l'makom, and the second five is called Mitzvah ben Adam l'chavera. Don't have unequal stones. You find some people today, comes to Avodas Hashem, first for Shacharis, every mitzvah, learning on time, the best lulav, mehudah, tefillah, everything. Comes treating their fellow man, no respect at all. Never any respect. You get the opposite extreme. Person comes to the, I'm a good Jew at heart, I give charity, I take the lady across, I give people lives, I help them here. Comes to the Torah, the Torah's not really for me. Comes along the Torah, says, Lo yihyeh b'kischa even v'even gedolo katana. You shouldn't have unequal stones. Even shleima v'tzedek. They have to be complete, they have to be righteous. L'man yarichu niyamecha. L'man yarichu always means in the next world. Your next world will be great by understanding this. To have the right balance. That's a really important fundamental.
What parsha was that in?
The Parsha Ki Tetzei, towards the end of the parsha. Now, Eliezer designed the test. What did Eliezer say? The woman from whom I will ask water, and she will give me to drink, and offer to give my camels, that is going to be the girl who's going to be suitable for Rivka. It sounds crazy. Yeah? You're pinning the hopes on one little thing of someone giving water. What does it mean if she comes along and she gives water? So Baba's chesed. My son came home. He said, Daddy, you know, Rivka was so kind, married Yitzhak. In order to be the mother of Klal Yisrael, you need a bit more than chesed. Chesed is a key thing, very, very important. But you need bina, you need understanding, you need deeper insight. A woman has to have very, very important virtues. If that's the case, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik of Brisk asks this question. How would this test tell Eliezer that this girl had all the credentials needed to marry a Yitzhak Avinu? He says the most unbelievable thing. So this was the test. He comes to the well and he asks for the water. She now sends the trough all the way down to the well and brings it up. They never had these disposable cups and little tubes by the well in those days. So you drink out of the bowl. He drinks out of the bowl. What happens now? He wants to see how clever Rivka is. He could be ill, he could be sick, in which case he could have caused a disease and problem with the water. What's she going to do with this water now? If she takes it home, she shows she's irresponsible, because she could endanger her family and make them ill, because this guy may be carrying the disease. Maybe. But she's got to think, she's got to use seichel. And then she just throws it on the floor. Well, resigned to the guy. You're throwing the guy, he drank, bring your cup on the floor. Me and Josh share a cup sometimes, you know? What was she supposed to do? Then he said, look, if I give it to the camel, he'll think, you know why she's being given to camel? Because trying to be clever. Because she knows if she takes it home, I'll think this. And if she gives it on the floor, I'll think that. Then we'll give it to the camel. So what does Rivka say? No. I'm going to go down again and bring more water. I want to show you that I'm feeding the camels Leshem Shemayim. I want to show you that she's made all the cheshbonos to realize, to show him how great her understanding and knowledge was. But that is what Rav Chaim says, that was the actual test. To see her brilliance, to see how her mind works, in order to know that she's now suitable to marry in this home of Avraham Avinu. I heard another idea. If you imagine, Rivka's a young girl. According to some opinions, she was 3, which is the most likely opinion, because it seems to say from the text that when Yitzchak was at the Akedah, she was born, and Yitzchak married her at 40, so therefore it's possible that she was 3 years old. Other opinions say 12, but again, we must understand, as a 3-year-old today, in those generations, they're much, much more mature. Okay, but I can't really go into it because I'm not an expert in that field, but from what I've understood, you can't compare generation to generation. Imagine, Rivka's at the well. She sits over there, suddenly turns up Eliezer. Now, Eliezer was huge. The guy was WWF Federation, big time, right? Standing over there with 10 camels, I don't know how many servants standing by him. And she comes along and he says, excuse me, young lady, get me some water. What would you be thinking? Who do you think you are? What are those slaves for? Be asking me, I'm a young girl, a young little maid left by the well. Go and ask the guys over there. What did she do? Silence. She went there and got the water and came back. What does that show? That shows. She said to herself, of course she realised what it could mean. But she said to herself, if that man is asking me to go down to the well, and he's got a line of servants over there, he must have a very good reason. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to go and do it. That's a middah which is essential. To be a mother in Klal Yisrael, you need to have that. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Danat kolad adam lekavskos. Always judge a person favorably. Had to take Rav Berkovitz. He said that part of the mitzvah is to think out. Not just to say, okay, I'm sure you've got a good reason. No, no. You've got to think out, work out in your mind what could have happened that the guy came late to the shir. He might have fallen down. He might have been doing chet on the way. He might have had to do a mitzvah. Think it through. That's what your mitzvah is. But it says in Medayik in the pasuk, in the Mishnah, it says Dan et kol adam lekavskos, all of man. So under Mefarshim say kol is the whole of man. How do you judge a person? If you judge him as a whole, meaning a person's done 10 good things in their life and now he's done one thing absolutely wrong, but he's done one bad thing in relation to 10 good things. So if you judge kol ha'adam, you judge him as a whole, you always find him worthy, always find him favourable. Even again, because you know he did wrong. Very important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which is day to day we're faced with situations where we have that mitzvah passing us. We should really try and focus a little bit more over there. Now, finally, you know, when Rivka and Eliezer, you know, has his interview with Rivka, he goes through a few things. He then pulls out a bunch of gifts. Yeah, Pasuk Nun Gimel. Says over here, Vayotza Eved, Eved brings out Kli Keser, Kli Zav, Begadim. Silver, gold, silver, and clothes. The girl Rebbe says, Vos Pshat clothes. Suddenly, you know, Eliezer, you know, happened to work for Miss Selfridges. He knew all about fashion design. He knew about what size, Or are you going to say, you know, he came with a small medium, therefore he was going to try and find a shidduch for her with a small medium size? How did he know what size the girl was? What size the clothes? He gave her clothes. How did he know? He answers, the clothes he gave her were not clothes that she should wear. The clothes he gave her were symbolic. He's saying to her, Rivka, my dear, now you're going to the home of Avraham Avinu, you've got to know the darga of tznius. You've got to know the level of modesty which applies. You want to go into God Latour's house? Fine. But you've got to understand, you've got to wear this style of clothes. These are the clothes you're showing her to know. Kol kvadav bas melech pnima. The beauty of a woman is that which is inside. Today, unfortunately, people seem to think it's the other way around. But tznius plays an integral part, especially for the women of Klal Yisrael. Today we live in such a different generation. The average woman who walks on the street looks like she's about to take a shower, and that's in the winter. But it's got to a very, very bad stage. And I once heard Rabbi Hillel say the following pshat in Eishet Chayil. He said in Eishet Chayil, Sadin asta vatimkor v'chago natna lakenamin. Simple meaning is, a woman, an Eishet Chayil, is one who's going to help her husband to sit and learn. Therefore, she makes sheets. Sadin asta, she makes sheets, vatimkor, and she sells them. Vechago natna leknanim, she gives belts to the Canaanites. See, us once there was an old man. What's pshat in this? What do you mean? She makes sheets, she gives belts. What's going on over here? So some guy from the audience said, "I go look, Shlomo Melech was a businessman. Was a gimmick rav. He basically she basically sells sheets and you get a free belt. You know." So he turned and said, "Very good pshat. You know, you buy 10, get one free by this." But he goes, "I don't think Shlomo Melech had that kavana when he wrote Yeshiva Chayil." And he gave a pshat which he heard from a great Baghdadian sage, which is so beautiful. See how you can read the pasuk differently. Here's a woman of ultimate tznius. A pride and joy. Jewish woman is a pride and joy. She's behind. Sadin asta vatimkor. She put up a veil, a curtain, a sheet, so she could sell. She didn't want to see the guy. She didn't want the guy to see her. She was sneered. She hid behind the sheet. But the Rambam says that a man's not even allowed to look at the little finger of a woman and derive pleasure from it. It's Esau. So how's she going to get the money? Now she got the money. She put the belt through the sheet. He put the money there and she put it back. That's how he explained the thing. But just as an idea to show you, yeah, the level of we're alien to these things today. The alien. I'll tell you that another thought. I happen to also hear from Rav Hillel. Of Yaakov Hillel. Yeah, Hacham Hillel. He says, you know, we say, Shia Mala Samachti Be'oimim Li, Beit Hashem Melech. I was happy when they said to me, and now I go to Hashem's house. What? Sorry? Shia Mala Samachti Be'oimim Li, read it on Shabbos. Shia Mala Samachti Be'oimim Li, Beit Hashem Melech. I'm doing to Gim Shalai, Gim Shalai. I don't know if I should say it, but it's one of the Shemalas
Shemalas.
Yeah, Shemalas. I'll show you later in a minute. Yeah. Anyway, Samachti Be'oimim Li, Beit Hashem Nelech. See, once it was typed like this. In the olden days, in Iraq and places, a single woman would never leave the house without her mother. You'd never find a single girl on the street. Unheard of. Not tznius. Samachti be'omrim li. When my chosim would tell me, hurry up, mikdeshes li. Beis Hashem nelech. Only then was I allowed to go to shul on my own. Yeah, again, another idea that the women are. We said, when you have a diamond, where do you put a diamond? Do you flaunt it or do you hide it away? Your diamond's going to be safe. What is your wife to you? Is she your diamond? She's your diamond. You keep it for yourself. You don't have to just flaunt to the. To the whole world. I just end off with a couple that I left on the wall, which no one's really come with the exact answer. But the question was, we see from Parperik Kaf Dalet, Avraham Avinu's relationship with Eliezer. He always is referred to Eliezer as Eved Avraham. The Eved did this. The Eved took this. The Eved did this. Suddenly we find in the middle of the pasuk turns to Haish. The man did. The man did. The man took out. The man took out. The man did. And in conclusion, after that, suddenly it goes back to Eved. So why does the Torah go Eved, 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 Ish, 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 Eved, 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 Eved? Why does it make that change? So this is the answer that I've heard, but I've not seen anywhere brought down, and I would love someone to look into it, ask your Rosh Yeshivas, rabbis, see what they can come up with. But he said the following idea. Eliezer had a daughter, and Eliezer really wanted his daughter for Yitzchak. He says, Ulai. He said, perhaps I won't find, all the time he had kavanah, ulterior motives, that maybe I won't find a suitable wife, and you'll take my daughter. So when he went all the time, he went with ulterior motives. He wanted, things shouldn't really work out, and I'll come along and I'll give my daughter to Yitzchak. So he set up this litmus test, to work out that this is the right one. And lo and behold, he finishes speaking, and suddenly Rivka is coming down. Hashem appears in such a level, he's now called an Ish. An Ish is a much higher madriga. It's an elevated state of a person's madriga. And evidence is already a lower club. He's now gone to Ish because he had a relationship with Hashem. Hashem kind of connected, revealed to him, showed the, he listened to his tefillahs. He became an Ish. All the time, an Ish, and an Ish, and an Ish, and an Ish. Suddenly, when Rivka went down to the well and came back in, she noticed a young girl and she tore her hymen. She tore her hymen from the strain, the water, the heavy water, than a young girl. He said, once he noticed that, he said, look, Yitzhak Avin is the Ola Tanima. He's a perfect, close you can get. Nevertheless, Eretz Yisrael, Ta'on Al-Qaeda, whatever we learned in the Shir, Mirashama of Al-Qaeda, whatever. This girl is not going to be worthy for Yitzhak again. I was going to come and chuck her out. So straight, as soon as he saw that, as soon as that happened, back again, his mind started ticking, and he lost his dagga of Ishram back to being an Eber, because he had ulterior motives again. That's how he is. Rav Moshe Kaim in London. Rav in London. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Yeah. 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 Yeah.